This is the Better Reading Podcast platform with stories behind the story, Jane's Be Better podcast, My Book Chat with Caroline Overington, and more. Looking for a particular podcast? Remember, you can always skip to it.
Hi everyone, I'm Jane Tara and I'm chatting to authors and experts about their self-help, wellness and personal development books. If you're looking for ways to be happy, be well and be inspired, you've come to the right place. Welcome to Better Reading Be. Gyan Yankovic is the lifestyle editor at the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age. She was previously based in New York, where she held editor roles at Man Repeller and BuzzFeed. She's written about lifestyle, culture and relationships for The Cut, Vox, The Guardian, Vice and more. Now, in her debut book, she explores friendship. Just Friends is about what it means to be, to make and sometimes lose a friend. It's a great read. So welcome, Gyan. Thank you for coming on the podcast to talk about one of my favourite subjects. I don't think I've ever read anything quite like it, and yet it's such an important subject to be discussing and to talk about, and certainly, you know, important to me. I've been blessed with lifelong friends, and I don't think I ever really considered how essential they were to my mental health and to my overall well-being until recent years. So we'll get into that, but, you know, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm always excited to speak to someone who shares the same very intense passion for friendship as I do, which it sounds like you do.
Well, I do. Absolutely. I'm blessed with so many great long-term friendships, but some of them are from, you know, when I was 7 or 8, and we've grown up and now growing older together. Older, not old, just in case they're listening. But as you say in your book, because the book opens in 2020 with you in New York during COVID, I think it was then that I realized just how essential the small things that make up a big friendship were in my life. So just for anyone who's listening, tell us a little bit about the book, the elevator pitch.
The elevator pitch of the book. I mean, the elevator pitch of the book is that, as you said, I think a lot of us know and understand how important our friends are. We love our friends. We want to spend time with them. You know, we're talking to them constantly. They're part of our best memories and our most fun plans that we're looking forward to. But I kind of realized that I think a lot of us underestimate the importance of these relationships in our lives, especially when compared to, you know, the time that we spend thinking about our familial relationships and also the relationships we have with romantic partners. So what I really sought to do for this book was look at essentially everything in our lives. So everything from technology and social media to work to romantic relationships to loss and grief, and think about how our friendships, you know, exist within all of these emotions and scenarios and little pockets of our existence, because they're everywhere and they're making a huge impact.
And it's everything that you were saying there, you don't realize how interwoven your friends are into your life, how important they are, but also how, like, for instance, if one of them dies or if a friendship breaks down, you don't have the same support from others that you might if it's your romantic relationships. And that's interesting to me, and it's interesting to see you write about these things. So talk to me about 2020 when you were living in New York, and I'm guessing that's where the seed of this idea came from, around that time.
It is. I mean, I had been writing about friendship in various roles. I'm a journalist and editor, and I've been doing that for almost 15 years now. So I had written about friendship before. It'd always been in the back of my mind as this topic that I was always really keen to explore and dig into. But, you know, like yourself, like so many other people in my life, I kind of found myself in the pandemic, and you really began reassessing what was important and what you missed when everything was really, really stripped back. And for me, that was my friends. But what was most surprising to me at the time, I was living overseas. I had been for about 3 years at that point. So I was really used to not seeing my closest, nearest, dearest friends because most of those were still living back in Australia. So in my time, you know, I was really concerned for my closest and oldest friends, but I wasn't missing them because I hadn't seen many of them in, you know, 6 months, a year. We were used to doing the voice notes and the FaceTimes and the, you know, figuring out the difference between time zones to catch up. I was used to all of that. So I was really shocked to find myself longing for my more casual friends, you know, the friends that I had at work, the friends that I would catch up with for dinner every few weeks, the friends that I knew I would run into at someone's birthday party every few months. You know, all of a sudden I was realizing how much those people, those more middling friends were bringing to my life, which was really surprising because I think a lot of us, when we think about friendship and the friends that impact us most, we do think of those really big, meaningful, impactful friendships. And of course, they are so important and so precious. But there's also, I think, a real conversation to be had by everything we have to gain by thinking about as well the joy that our acquaintances can bring and the people that we are excited to run into, even if we're, you know, they're not someone that we pick up the phone and call.
And community in general. So I think one of the early visuals I had during the pandemic, and it just really moved me and has never really left me, was I live in Bondi, and in the early days of the pandemic where you weren't allowed, no one knew what was going on, everyone was fearful, but you're going out in public, you would keep your distance, but down at Bondi watching the sunset on this kind of wall and grass bit were people by themselves or with someone at a distance, but lots of people doing exactly this, watching the sunset, but being out still as part of a community, just at a distance. You talk about that too in the opening with a friend of yours, and you're sitting in a park and there's a circle, you've got to sit at a certain distance, rode your bike down there or something, and sitting at a distance just for that connection, even though it's a different type of connection, just to have that. Yes, it's those broader kind of people in our life, broader, you know, in our lives that that make up our communities as well, not just the close friendship. And I know a lot of us missed that during the pandemic. So talk to me about your friendships. You said that during the pandemic, you'd already got used to nurturing your friendships via technology. And that's something that you write about in the book, like this new world of being able to maintain friendships as well. So talk to me a little bit about that, because I was a little bit late to the game with, probably because of my age. You know, my sons have friends that they've never even met because they've met them through gaming or whatever. But I was a little bit late to that, thinking that you had to meet normally and build up friendships in the normal way. But that's not the way that friendships work now.
No, it's not necessarily. And I think when we have the conversation about technology, I always do think that there's a few different things to keep in mind. I think that, first of all, I totally agree with, you know, this experience that your sons and a lot of people that I had that I interviewed for the book have had as well, in that they've met people who they might never meet in person, and they've formed these really, really meaningful, very real connections with them. You know, I interviewed two women in the book who live in different countries, and I expected to interview them. I spoke to them both separately, and I expected when I spoke to them to there be this real longing to want to meet in person. And I was so surprised that that wasn't there at all. And I think that they'd started this friendship not having met. And now, you know, years later, they were like, it would be really nice to meet, but this is enough. And we know that this is enough. It's not, meeting isn't an end point to this friendship, which I thought was really amazing. And it's an experience that a lot of people have. So I always want to make sure that those relationships feel valid, because I think sometimes for people who haven't had that experience with online connection, they can sometimes belittle those kind of relationships and think, oh, you know, but it's not real because you haven't really met them, or not understanding the meaning that you can forge with someone online, particularly when there are so many ways we can connect, whether it's over video or voice notes or all these things. On the flip side of that, I do think a lot about how social media can change the way that we interact with people who we can see in person. You know, you're not connected, you're not disconnected from them by distance or anything like that, but I think that, and I found myself, that social media can make us feel like we're in touch with people more than we might actually be. Mm. You know, you're liking on Facebook, you're leaving a comment on Instagram, you're following their updates, you're seeing the photos, and you kind of build up this illusion of knowing how someone is because you've seen the photos of their family, you know, they just went on holiday and they got back and they cooked this for dinner and all of that stuff that make us feel like we're having this really intimate relationship with someone, when often you can kind of look up months later and think, oh, I haven't actually sent that person a text, or we haven't spoken on the phone, or we haven't caught up for coffee the way that we used to. Mm. And that's because we are in this constant contact. And I think that sometimes that can actually diminish our friendships a little bit because we are having this superficial connection that can really easily, if you're not careful, replace that meaningful in-person connection that I find, you know, in myself, that's really what recharges a friendship. And you get together with someone and you end up talking about things that you would never expect to, because it just flows, because it's often easier to chat to someone when you're sitting across from them.
Mm, absolutely. And so you're back in Australia after living in New York. So I lived overseas for 13 years and I lived in 5 countries. So wow. Each place I lived in, I had my community of people. Now, the beauty of social media, or Facebook particularly, is that all of those friends are on there, but the space between us has grown, and yet there's still a very strange connection because we're still aware of what's happening in each other's lives, as you say, but living around the corner and going for a beer, or, you know, going for coffee or whatever, doesn't happen and hasn't happened for a very long time for, you know, a few of those groups. So how are you finding maintaining your core relationships from, say, New York, now that you're back here?
Yeah, it's something that I think about a lot, because it's probably something that I thought I would be a little bit better at, maybe. And I think, you know, when I moved to New York, I was really adamant about keeping my friendships in Australia alive. I put a lot of effort into them. But I have caught myself thinking lately, like, was a big part of that drive because I knew that one day I would move back to Australia. And I think that, admittedly, it has been a lot harder to keep in touch with people in New York. And I do have friends who I forget to write back to their texts for a month, and then I feel really bad. And I think, oh, when am I going to go back? And, you know, oftentimes Americans, they don't really come to Australia. It's not a very common holiday destination. I can only get back to New York as often as I can. It's a very long and expensive trip over there. So it is really difficult. And it's been something that I've kind of had to reckon with, in that friendships do change, and that's okay. And, you know, I think that it's okay to grieve that friendships do change. And it is sad when there is that person who you used to catch up with for a beer every week because they lived around the corner, or you used to work with someone, or, you know, you live just down the street, so you go for a walk some mornings before work. It's really sad when you feel that closeness shift. But I do think that sometimes that's just part of circumstance. And at the end of the day, I've kind of had to make peace with the fact that you can really only keep so many people close at a time. And it is really sad. And I do miss the closeness that I have with those people. But I think that it's just understanding that we're in a bit of a new rhythm now. And the people that I want to stay in touch with, I'm going to have to make an effort to, because it's not something that's going to be easy or come natural now. But also in that, there will be people that I maybe do accidentally fall out of touch with a little bit, and, you know, maybe lifting some of the pressure on myself that I've probably put on the last few years. Did you feel that as well? It's really tricky, I think.
I think I'm at the point now where it's been a very long time. I lived in various places, New York and London, I'm thinking of when I talk about this. I lived in Japan for a long time, and when I go back there, I have the time and space to see people. But if I went to London now, I have so many good friends to catch up with that I'd need to be there for 3 months. So I'm like, well, maybe just, I don't know, defriend them on Facebook so they don't know I'm coming over or something.
It's hard. Yeah, it's hard. I definitely felt that when I used to come back to Australia. You know, as you would know from living in the US, their annual leave policy is tight. You know, it's like you get your 2 weeks off, and I'm like, okay, well, I don't want to really spend all of my time off back in Australia. I also want to explore this new country I'm living in. So yeah, you would get back and, you know, you would have this weird process of being like, okay, well, I want to see like my best friend more than once. You know, I want to see them 3 times. And oftentimes that means like there's some people that you see for a weird 45-minute coffee window, or you don't see it all. And it is really difficult. And I think that when you're someone who doesn't like letting people down, especially people who you do consider a friend and who you would love to catch up with if you could find the time, it is really tricky. And those trips home used to give me a lot of anxiety, actually, which was hard because I looked forward to them so much. And then I would feel a lot of pressure.
But also it never feels like a holiday.
No.
Because you're catching up with everyone, I know. So, and then it takes a while to adjust being back. But with friends, as you get older, and this is what I've discovered that I have, and particularly over COVID, maybe released some friendships that weren't serving me so I could focus, because I'm so busy that, you know, I want to focus on a smaller group of friends and not the broader circle of friends. So talk to me about ending friendships, protocol around that. You know, I was talking to a girlfriend the other night about how she'd been ghosted by a friend, which of course isn't, you know, completely new term that's come into friendships and relationships. So talk to me about that. Is there a way to actually do it? Should we be sitting down like we do a romantic partner and saying this isn't working for me anymore?
Yeah, it's interesting. And it's a conversation I had with someone who I interviewed for the book. She's an American friendship coach and expert, Danielle Baynard-Jackson. And she was telling me that she always used to be very anti-ghosting. You know, she was like, there's no excuse for it. You should never do it. And she was telling me, which actually changed my mind about it as well, and that she referred to less, not as ghosting, but as a friendship drift, were her words, which I thought was sometimes a little bit nicer. I don't think that people go into these situations being like, I'm going to ghost this person. Sometimes you do want to pull back and you do find yourself drifting. But her point of distinction between what's okay and what's not okay with a friendship is whether it's a mutual drift or a mutual ghosting. And I think that most of us have been in that scenario where you find yourself canceling some plans, but then they're canceling some plans on you. You're texting a bit less, they're texting a bit less. And you can kind of tell that the drift is mutual. On the flip side, I think that you can also tell when you're the one that's constantly canceling plans, the other person's trying to make plans, the other person's calling you and texting you, and you're the one who's not replying or not engaging as much. I think in that scenario is when someone's more likely to be hurt because it's not mutual. And there probably is this person on the other end who really feels like they're being ghosted and is really confused and doesn't want to drift away from you, and that's why you can sense that kind of desperation. I think in that circumstance, that's when it is about considering having a conversation with someone. And, you know, that conversation doesn't necessarily have to be, I don't want to be friends with you anymore. It could just be, hey, I'm going through a really busy period of my life. I'm not going to be around that much in the next few months. Like, when I come up for air, I would love to catch up with a coffee, but like, I'll let you know. You know, I feel bad that I'm always canceling on you. How about I'll let you know when I've got more time, but until then, you know, I hope everything's great with you. I'll chat to you soon. You know, maybe that kind of thing. And then whether that needs to be another conversation down the track, that's a bit of another story. But I do think that if you don't want to hurt someone, which I don't think that many of us do when it comes to friendships and these kind of drift or ghosting situations, you've got to think about whether the other person knows what's going on.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
I did exactly that to someone not long ago. Well, yeah, a couple of years ago, and I've had to do it twice. And it's not that I even dislike this person. It's just that we actually didn't have any common interests at this point in our lives. It was more that I felt like I had to see her. It was taking a day out of my schedule every time I saw her. And I was exhausted after. I'd have to recover. So I sort of, yeah, so I did that. I didn't ghost her, but I said, look, when I come up for air. And then she texted a few months later, are you up for air yet? And, you know, not. So I'm not yet, but hope all is well with you. So, but felt really guilty about doing it because I know that there's a bigger agenda for me, and that is to kind of cut ties there. Mm. You know, you can only do what you can do as long as you're not hurting people, I guess.
Yeah, and it's a tricky situation to navigate, I think, as well, because we don't talk about it as much.
Mm.
You know, I think especially, you know, a few years ago before a lot of my friends coupled up or started getting married, so many of our conversations were about, should I end it with this person? Should I keep seeing them? What should I say? Is this a text thing or is it something that I should probably meet up with them in person to say? Like, we were so in contact about dating and relationships and labels and breakups and, you know, ghosting and all of these things. It was very constant chatter all the time that out of those conversations, we all got to share our thoughts and advice and, you know, situations so that it felt really normal that we were having these relationship shifts and making these decisions about people mm-hmm. we wanted in our lives or didn't want in our lives. But we don't have that same conversation about friendships. And I think that that's what can make friendship breakdowns and breakups feel really, really lonely for people on both sides as well. Because, you know, whether you're the person who wants to end something and you feel guilty telling someone else in your life that you're trying to, you know, give someone the hint, or if you're on the other side of it and you feel a little bit embarrassed that there's someone in your life who, you know, probably doesn't want to be friends with you, I think that's a really hard thing to admit. And then you're not only going through a really hard time with someone you considered a friend, but you're also feeling completely alone.
And this is what's great about your book. It's actually having this conversation and opening up this conversation about the different layers of friendship that we need to be looking at, because we look at other relationships in that way. But then, you know, if someone cuts ties with us or we feel like cutting ties with someone else, we don't really have the sort of roadmap of how to do that with a friend.
No, definitely not.
And same goes with grief. So talk to me a little bit about when you lose a friend.
Yeah, so this was one of the chapters that I found the hardest to write, but it was actually the first chapter of the book that I wrote because I was really interested in what happens when a close friend dies. And I'd seen a few people who had lost close friends and posting about it on Instagram and kind of saying how lost they felt and trying to keep memories of their friend alive. And, you know, I was really taken aback by it because it wasn't something that I'd seen before. You know, I'm in my early 30s. So thankfully, you know, a lot of my friends' parents, my own parents are still with us, but we're not at the age yet where a lot of us are losing friends, but I did start to see it and I found it really affecting. So I was like, what has been written about this? What can I find? And I came across this really interesting research that had found that losing a close friend can be just as impactful, you know, physically, mentally, psychologically, as losing a close family member, and that these effects can last up to 4 years.
Mm.
And I just thought that was so interesting because it's not something that had been spoken about in the same way. You know, when someone is off work because their parent has passed away or they've lost a sibling, you know, that is something that very much everyone's like, this is what's happened. We're crowding around this person. Like, you know, we're supporting them. What can we do? But, you know, in any of the workplaces that I had worked, at least that conversation had never happened about a friend. And I've found it very hard to believe that that's because no one I ever worked with had ever lost a best friend. You know, that's definitely not the case. That would be very statistically unusual if that had never happened. We don't talk about it. And then when I, you know, found this research and started having conversations with people who had lost a friend, the recurring theme was how lonely it is and how isolating, and that there's a lack of support from everything from, you know, palliative care units to grief groups to all of these, you know, very important support networks that we have when we lose someone who is within our close family. They're just not there for friends. Even in terms of, you know, Australia's bereavement leave policy, it extends to people who are in your household or in your immediate family. And unless you live with a friend, you're just banking on having an empathetic workplace. You are not entitled to a single day off, even if you lose your best friend of 40 years, which is, it's devastating.
Yes, there's no coming back from it. I thought I'd get to this part of the podcast without howling. I was just sneaking the death thing in. But so I lost one of my best friends nearly 4 years ago. And so still feeling it. I'm very fortunate that Cheryl, who is the director of Better Reading, she sent me flowers immediately, and then it was like, you're taking time off. She got it, you know, because she has close friendships herself. But it's something that just weighs on you constantly, like the death of a family member, and yet it's not the same as with how other people check in on you, I guess. I'm fortunate in that the person I lost, his brother is actually one of my best friends. And so we had this little triangle, and there's one point of the triangle missing. And so I've got the support from his brother, I guess. But, you know, you just go about it in your day, and it's treated very differently in the conversations that people have about the depth of grief that you can feel for a friend. And I look at my, and I've lost other friends as well. This one was particularly, particularly difficult, but I've lost quite a few friends at my age along the way, and acquaintances. And I'm now looking at my really close friends and going, oh my God, at some stage, one of us is going first. You know, how do we deal with that? And I guess we deal with it by having these conversations now and making these conversations normal about, you know, how important friends are and how difficult it is when one of them dies.
Definitely. And I think, you know, I had some really hard interviews for the book with people who were still devastated years on from losing their friends. And I was so overwhelmed by the generosity of these people talking about the hardest thing they've ever had to face, talking about someone who is gone, sharing such genuine and, you know, intimate, loving details with me for this book. But the reason that they were doing it was because they thought, and they all said this to me, I don't want someone else to be in this situation and feel like they don't have anyone that they know that has been through this. They don't have anything to read. They don't know that they're not alone in this experience and this extreme loss that you feel when a friend slips away. And I think that that's, you know, all we can do while we wait for more meaningful change. You know, I'm so happy to hear that your workplace were understanding of that. And you would hope that most workplaces are, but it's difficult when you are relying on having a good manager, having a good boss, you know, having someone who pushes you to take annual leave. Like, that's far from the case with every workplace. But I think until things like government policy change, like, it's very much on us to have the conversations and, you know, to write the words, make the podcasts, you know, spread the word about this stuff, because it is so unexpected when it happens. So all you can hope for in that time is that someone in your life has come across one of these conversations and knows how to act.
Yes, that's right. And it's the ripple effect of personal experience as well. You know, I'm very aware of when people have friends die now, whereas before maybe I wasn't as aware. Like, you know, I would be there for them, but maybe not for the long term. And this is it's a long-term thing that you process. It doesn't go away quickly, just like with any death that you grieve.
Exactly. And I think, I mean, as empathetic as we all try to be, there is a certain point where you can only stretch so far unless you've had someone tell you, this was my experience when this happens, or you've heard something, or you've had it happen to yourself. I don't think that anyone's necessarily to blame in those conversations, especially, you know, grief is such a hard thing to put yourself in if you haven't experienced it, which is why I think it's so important that we kick these things off and, you know, keep reminding people so that people can be there for their friends, and then their friends are there for their friends, and then eventually it all comes back around. So we're all more connected because, you know, death is sadly so inevitable, and yet we're still so unprepared for it when it comes.
And this is one of the things that we can't get away from. It. It is going to happen. So these conversations are really important, and books like this are really important to have, you know, to be talking about friends and the subject of friends and the loss, and as well as the benefits that having a strong support system brings into your life. So with your book, what do you hope the reader will take away from it?
I think the biggest thing that I took away from it, which I hope is what other people do as well, is kind of recognizing the effort that friendships require and that that effort is worth it. You know, I think that a lot of the time we go into friendships assuming that they should be easy and they should be fun and that they shouldn't involve hard conversations or tough times or being there when we don't really want to be or obligation, all these things that I think we often tie up with, you know, children and parents and work and family obligations and commitments. But they're all really important for friendship as well, and it does pay off. I think that that's the biggest thing, you know, even for people like you and I who are like, I cherish my friends. I know how much they mean to me already. They're some of my favorite people. I think that there's further for us all to stretch. And I think that there's nothing but good things that can come from doing the work and thinking what more you can do, because people are going to see that and they're going to send it back your way.
Absolutely. My best friend, who I call my wifey, because it is like an old marriage by the time you get to my age, because you've gone through it all together, including the really tough times with each other, and you've traversed that and you've healed hurts, and, you know, you come out like a marriage, a long-term marriage. You come out and there's something of great value there if you've made it through some of the tougher stuff when you're younger.
Yeah, definitely.
So, Kian, it was fabulous talking to you today. Thank you so much. The book is Just Friends. And look, go and get a copy, everyone, and read it and then give it to one of your friends.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit energycitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
If you enjoyed this podcast, leave us a review and check out the other podcasts on the Better Reading Network.